Welcome to WMNF 88.5 FM or WMNF.org. You're listening now to the Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan. Happy New Year. This hour, we're going to talk about a major pressing issue for Floridians and really for everyone, the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Later on in the show, we're going to be joined by a doctor who will answer your questions about the ongoing spike in COVID-19 cases in Florida. First up, we're going to set the stage a bit about what's going on in Florida when it comes to the coronavirus infections. And we are going to be taking your calls. Well, just a few weeks ago, the rate of positive coronavirus tests was below 5% in all Tampa Bay area counties. But now the positivity rate in Pinellas has climbed to 19.5% in the week that ended Christmas Eve. That's the highest since a spike in August. In Hillsborough, coronavirus positivity rate was 13.6% for the week that ended December 28th. As I begin the show, the questions I'm going to ask you right now are, what do you think, do you think that your governments have been doing a good job in protecting you from COVID-19? What do you think about the Biden administration's response? How about the CDC? What about here in Florida, locally and statewide? How has Ron DeSantis done as governor of Florida in protecting you from the coronavirus? You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, and I'll try to get to your emails. Or you can text 813-433-0885. If you text, make sure you sign your name, please. Also, you can call 813-239-9663, and we'll try to get on as many callers as we can. And if I can't answer your question, I will write it down and ask the doctor later on in the show. So, and I also want to know, have you been tested recently? What was your experience like when you went to get tested? Was there a long line? And did you do it at a county or a city testing facility? Or did you do it at a private company? Did you get results back that you trust? So these are some of the questions that I'm interested in hearing from you in the new year here in this new wave of COVID-19, about the fourth or fifth major wave that we faced in Florida. And this one certainly looks like it's going to be the most numerous, at least the most number of people who get tested positive. We're very close to that record right now, or at least in the last numbers that we saw, and the trend seemed to be still going up. Do you think that the Omicron variant is as severe? Does it cause as severe a reaction? That might be something we can also talk about as well. So again, the number is 813-239-9663. You can text 813-433-0885. Please sign your name and where you're calling from. Also, you can email dj@wmnf.org. Some of the news that we've been hearing today is that it still does have to get final CDC approval, but the FDA has approved another round of boosters for children aged 12 to 15. So that's something that, let us know whether you think your 12 to 15-year-old is, if you're looking forward to getting them boosted, or if you're going to have a more wait-and-see approach, give us a call about that. Also, I want to read this news that came in on the AP wires this morning. Israel's prime minister says preliminary data on the fourth vaccine dose there shows that it safely brings about a five-fold increase in antibodies that battle the coronavirus. Naftali Bennett spoke today during a visit to a medical center where Israel launched a trial of a second booster early last week. It's now offering fourth doses of the Pfizer vaccine to people that are 60 years and old or older, those with weakened immune systems, and it's the first country to do so, to offer that second booster, the fourth dose. Bennett says the initial results show the fourth dose is as safe as the third dose, which has already been given to almost half of Israel's population of nearly 9.5 million people. So let us know what you think about that. Is it too soon for countries, to be offering fourth doses, these boosters, the second round of boosters, when a lot of the world hasn't been boosted yet? And what do you think about the inoculation rate in the United States? How many people have gotten their full first dose, second dose, and boosted? So back to Israel, it says, Naftali Bennett says the increase in antibodies indicates a very high likelihood that the fourth dose will protect vaccinated people to a great degree against infection to some degree and against severe symptoms. So that's what's going on there in Israel, with the fourth dose of the coronavirus being administered to certain groups of people. And I'd like to know your thoughts about boosters. Have you been boosted? Why? If you haven't or have, let us know. And what you think the government's role has been so far and whether it's been living up to the challenge, all different levels of government. Again, the number is 813-239-9663. You can also text 813-433-0885. You can email dj@wmnf.org. Later in the show, in about 15, 20 minutes, we're going to be joined by a doctor, and you can ask the doctor questions directly. But we're also talking about the latest news here about the coronavirus. In fact, we have some local news about the coronavirus positivity. St. Petersburg's incoming mayor will take office in a virtual inauguration ceremony after he tested positive for COVID-19. Ken Welch was scheduled to be sworn in on Thursday on the steps of City Hall as St. Pete's first black mayor, but that ceremony has been canceled to follow quarantine guidelines from the CDC. Officials say Welch was vaccinated early last year and received a booster in November. He first tested positive for COVID-19 yesterday morning using a home kit. A PCR test later in the day was also positive. Welch says he will work from home until he's cleared from isolation, and that swearing-in ceremony will be over Zoom on Thursday. It won't be in person. So what do you think about that local angle here about the outbreak that's happening in our area? So Karen in Dunedin writes that she's not been tested. She wears a mask when she's out and about. And she says that her company by request will have two at-home tests sent to you for free. So I think that means the company that she works for will send her two at-home tests for free, and she's had three shots. So thank you for that, Karen in Dunedin. We're also wondering what your situation is and why. I guess that's the main thing, is I'm wondering why. Why are you making the decisions you're making, and who are you relying on? Do you trust the CDC to give you accurate information? Do you trust the people that you hear on a certain news organization? Let us know. And the number is 813-239-9663. You can also text us at 813-433-0885 or email dj@wmnf.org. Here's a text that just came in from Doug in Clearwater. He says, is Omicron like the flu plus? So he is, this is a question that I probably will save as well to answer when the doctor comes in, but let me read these questions. He says, I'm not playing dude in COVID. I'm not sure what that means. In a few weeks, I'll be able to get my booster, but with so many people being vaccinated, these waves seem indeterminable. They say Omicron is highly transmissible, but the symptoms are slight. So that's Doug in Clearwater. What I'm going to do is save that for later in the show and ask the doctor those exact questions. And maybe tying into that is whether Doug should get that booster in a few weeks. Oh, he says he will. So we'll find out whether Doug thinks, or the doctor thinks, that that's advisable. 813-239-9663. I'm going to hear some more news that's come in. Officials say a South Florida hospital has temporarily closed its maternity ward due to staff shortages related to recent outbreaks of COVID-19. Mothers-to-be who had planned on giving birth at Holy Cross Health in Fort Lauderdale will have to find another option. Holy Cross spokesperson says that the temporary shutdown of the labor and delivery unit is best for patient safety. The hospital's neonatal intensive care and postpartum units remain open. Nearby hospitals are taking on patients from Holy Cross. The announcement comes as Florida continues to shatter daily records for new COVID-19 cases, which are most likely fueled by the Omicron variant. So we've been hearing since the beginning of the pandemic the fears that hospitals will be overrun with COVID-19 patients. Well, here's a case in Florida where the maternity ward at this hospital had to close because there's not enough doctors essentially to staff it. What do you think? 813-239-9663 or WMNF.org. And we have a COVID-19 question coming in over the phone. Hi, Karen in Dunedin. Did you want to ask your question now?
No, I don't have a question.
Go ahead.
You said, why are we doing the things we're doing in my text? It's too hard to text at all. I believe in science. To me, I work in insurance. I see COVID cases all day long. And my company is being very proactive, wants us to be vaccinated. Because, I mean, insurance, they benefit from live people, not dead people. So to me, I think it's so obvious, and I just think people are over it, and that's why they're not doing the right thing.
And I think in your text, you mentioned that your company is willing to send tests out. So that's one thing. Also, the federal government is going to make tests available to everyone if you request it beginning this month. If you request it, I think, online, and they'll mail it to you.
Yeah. A friend of mine who's sick at work, he just happened to be looking around and found it. They weren't really advertising it, and so now, you know, we all know about it, so everyone's requesting to have these sent to us. Just because I've seen the lines on the news, and I've heard people waiting in line for hours.
And there are some, just so people know, there are also some private companies like drugstores where you can make a reservation if you don't have to get it right away. If you want to wait a day or two until the reservations are opened up, you can go on the app for certain drugstores. I don't have to name them. You know what the drugstores are. So you can actually go and make an appointment to get tested there. And that means you won't wait as long in line, although you might have to wait a day or two until there is an open available appointment available. So thanks for calling in. Anything else, Karen?
I don't like being sick, period. I mean, I have faith in the vaccination, but I don't even want to have a cold. Who wants to be sick, you know?
You know, that's
have
one.
Have a great day.
No, thank you. You too. That's one of the things that we noticed last year is that fewer people got the common cold last year and flus because of people were socially distancing and they were wearing masks a lot of times in public. They were washing their hands and the other precautions that people have been saying for years to help us not get sick in general. So, you know, I hate to say this, the silver lining of this horrible pandemic might be that we might get fewer sicknesses from other diseases. Of course, the pandemic is so bad that's kind of an odd take, but it's true. We might not get other diseases. All right, I've said enough about that. Thanks so much for listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. It's 10:18 in the morning. I want to remind people that in about 10 minutes, we have a doctor from Tampa General Hospital who's going to join us to talk about coronavirus. In the meantime, we're going to talk about some of the things that have been happening in the state, and we're going to hear your opinions about whether the federal and state and local governments are doing enough to protect you from COVID-19. So let's hear it right now from Liz in Spring Hill. Hi, Liz. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Sean. I'm calling in just to give a perspective. I own a business up here and how it is operating a business through this pandemic and whether I think the governor is doing a good job. I don't. While I am grateful for the opportunity to be open and working, I believe that there is a safe way to do business, and I've exemplified that in my business in the last I was closed for 20 weeks when we first broke out and didn't know what to do. And then using the guidance through the Department of Health and the CDC and my professional associations, I put together a safe way to do business, being in close quarters, because I'm a healthcare worker, I'm a massage therapist, I'm with people in a tiny room on top of you all the time. And in this time, I have, up until now, of course, Omicron's a different bug, but I have had no breakthrough infections. I use masking, vaccination, and I use cleaning protocols and air purifying as a combination thing, and especially masking. In these situations, I've devised a whole thing of where you can be down on a massage table without I built in a mask into the table that's individual to the person. So there's ways of working safely, but the governor is so busy demonizing the vaccines and everything else for political gain that he's not using his head. And I'll tell you, I know I'm going on long, but there's been a change in the trend. Usually on the two busiest seasons of the year, which is January and February and October and November in service business, I had a 50% reduction, and it coincided with these huge surges. So these surges are hurting my business. They drop my revenue 50%. And with the new legislation going in, I might be able to sue my municipality for having practices that are bad for my business, according to some of the new legislation going into this state congressional thing that we're going into now.
And you think that having some protections and having some rules maybe might protect the whole community and protect your business and allow you to stay open, and it might mean that you could continue to make money even though there's a pandemic, even though you're at close quarters, as long as you take precautions.
Absolutely. I proved that. The person next to me has none of those precautions, and they've been closed no less than 3 times for coronavirus pandemic going through the office. I've proved it over and over again.
Sounds like...
So that's my 2 cents.
Thank you, Liz. I appreciate that comment. It sounds like the Florida Surgeon General, Latipo, might want to listen to that type of advice and see that some precautions being taken place actually keeps businesses open, allows businesses to stay open for longer. And we also heard that, that's a similar story to what we heard from the Save Our Stages groups, the small independent venues that were saying, look, we want to stay open. We want to be in business. We want to make money. But the government has to kind of put in place some rules that make it safe for us to do that. And so that was one of the reasons why, especially Florida businesses were feeling the pinch regardless.
And stop demonizing people who want to do it and wear masks. It's like, I'm being demonized because I wear a mask. And by the way, I'm walking around Spring Hill, probably 25% of the people are wearing masks. It's a free-for-all. They love it. They're coming down here because there are no rules. And we know human nature. We go right to the edge of the rules.
All right. Thank you for that call, Liz.
Thanks.
I appreciate that. And I just want to remind people that you're listening to Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan on WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. We broadcast all the way up into Hernando County, up into Citrus County, all the way down into Sarasota County, over to Polk. So the whole Tampa Bay area, West Central Florida region, is getting to hear us. You can also listen worldwide on WMNF.org or on the WMNF app. We're talking today about coronavirus, and in a few minutes I'm going to be joined by a doctor to answer your questions about the COVID-19 spike. And I want to mention that we'll go back to the phones in just a minute and emails and texts. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org, text 813-433-0885. You can also call at 813-239-9663. Some school systems around the U.S. have extended their holiday break, or they've switched back to online instruction because of the explosion in COVID-19 cases. We heard a little bit about that on the NPR News at the top of the hour. Other school systems are pressing ahead with in-person classes amid a seemingly growing sense that that Americans will have to learn to coexist with the virus. School districts in cities like Milwaukee, New York, Detroit, and beyond found themselves in a difficult position at the start of the second half of the academic year because of the super contagious Omicron variant. Many parents want their children back in school while some teachers fear infection. What's it like for you in your household, and if you have students that are going back to school this week? What are their school system rules, and what's happening there with that? How do you feel about how your school system is protecting you? 813-239-9663, or you can text 813-433-0885 or email dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to go back to the phones in just a minute. Let me read a couple of the texts that have come in. We have a text here from Pamela, who says, I'm a BC survivor, had 6 months of chemo pushed through my chest to save my life. I went through trauma, multiple surgeries, hair loss, etc., and still take a daily chemo that affects my bones negatively. I'm not a Trumper or anti-vaxxer. This came along at a time when I already had to give my life to science, and I'm science weary. Everyone has their own experience. I had both first round of COVID, which was 8 days like a truck hit me, and the second, which is about 5 days, that is lower back pain and a sweaty forehead. I wear a mask all the time when I'm out and about. I still get my yearly flu shot like I always have. So that's Pamela's experience out there. We're sharing our experiences with why we do what we do when it comes to COVID-19. And I'm also interested in how you think that the people who are tasked to protect us are doing. How's the federal government? How's the CDC doing? How is the state government and your local governments, like your school district and your local city governments? Here's an email from Greg, who writes, I have type 2 diabetes and viral congestive heart failure. I'm still trying to get boosted. I feel Republican is how he says it. Elected officials have been criminally negligent and should be charged with pandemicide, a crime against humanity. Could you please ask the doctor's opinion on whether public officials should be charged with pandemicide? So I'm writing that one down to ask the doctor when he joins me in a few minutes. And so DeMarco, Greg writes, he has written that he is still trying to get boosted. And I'm not sure what you mean by that, because pretty much anyone above the age of about 16 is eligible to get a booster. Is it that you're having a difficult time finding them? Because there's lots of free places around town that you can get boosters, whether that's the pharmacies or whether that's these places that are where you see the long lines that are mostly right now lines for tests. I don't know if they have other lines where you can get the boosters, but give it a try. I might try to remember to ask the doctor where people can get their boosters if they haven't gotten them yet. I'm thinking it's not as difficult as it was at the very beginning. I had a heck of a time getting my first shot out in March, but I think it's quite a lot easier now to get your boosters. There's not a massive shortage that I know of, and there's not very long lines for boosters as far as I know. So good luck with that, Greg, and we'll move on right now. Again, in a couple minutes, we're going to be joined by a doctor to answer your questions. Let's talk right now to Valerie in St. Petersburg. Hi, Valerie. Thanks for joining the show.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. And I just have a question. We have a governor that's concerned about COVID. I didn't realize that. I have a five-year-old in kindergarten who's been vaccinated, and no one wears masks. You know, every day he comes home, I'm like, where's your mask? Oh, I don't know. But I'm frightened to death. I have all the school boards, the names down, the people that voted against masks. It's a very, very simple way to control this, you know, or help control. All my granddaughters and their boyfriends, my husband, myself, we're all vaccinated with the boosters, or just my husband and I because we're old. And anyway, I work for the Pinellas County, and they just paid everybody $750 if they could prove that they got vaccinated. I mean, there are ways to make this happen, but we don't have a governor. He's a joke. I saw him on the news last night saying that it's not necessary. We're not going to lock down our state. Maybe this is why all the people are moving here, and this is another issue that's attached to this. Why are our rents going up by $250 a month, and they've done nothing to my home? And but we can't move. Where are you going to move to? You know, he's just opened up the state. He's just totally unrealistic. And, you know, I had no problem getting vaccinated. I've had a COVID test. I went to an urgent care because I have bronchitis. And they tested me. My granddaughter made an appointment at CVS because she works in the public also. But both one works at Dillard's, one works at Fresh Market, and they both, as employees, have to wear a mask. So that's all I have to say, and I love your show. Thank you.
Well, Valerie, thanks so much for saying that. And, you know, you bring up a good point about masks, because I think that if we boil down to it, if we get down to the nitty-gritty of it, we all want businesses to be open, and we all want schools to be open, and we all want kids in their classrooms learning with teachers in their classrooms. And from the beginning, really, maybe not the very beginning, but from as soon as we learned much about this disease, we were told that, hey, you know, that can happen if we're really good about masking. If there's good
distancing.
Exactly. If there's social distancing, good ventilation, and masking in schools, unless there's like a really massive outbreak locally, that can happen. People, you know, that's how you avoid spreading the disease. If people who are actively spreading the disease because they're positive stay home, and if everyone else who's asymptomatic, tests negative, stays in class with their masks on, you don't have really that as much to worry about. So I think that it's weird that there's one group of people who's so anti-mask, even though that's one of the main solutions that would allow us to keep our schools and our businesses open.
And the children children don't mind it. My little kindergarten guy, he dresses up as Spider-Man and you know, all the superheroes. He wears a mask. They don't even notice it. I'll get him, pick him up from school, and he'll have, you know, or rec center, have a mask on, and I'm like, honey, you can take your mask off in the car. They don't, you know, it's not a terrible thing, you know. It's not that inconvenient, and if it's going to save lives, I don't understand what's wrong with these people.
Right.
You know, I really think a lot of people that we wear our masks at work, and I still have the plexiglass and everything, but you don't know if people are telling the truth. But you look at the football players, all of them lying about wearing, you know, being vaccinated. Just crazy.
All right, Valerie, thanks so much for your call. 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. I hope to have a doctor from Tampa General Hospital on the air very shortly. So let me read this email. Read this AP story in the meantime. On Sunday night, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said he had tested positive for COVID-19 and is experiencing mild symptoms while quarantining at home. In a statement, Austin said he planned to attend key meetings and discussions virtually in the coming week to the degree possible. Austin says he was fully vaccinated and received a booster a few months ago. Another member of President Biden's cabinet, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, tested positive for COVID-19 in October. So people who are vaccinated are not being spared. The Omicron variant is very contagious, and it luckily has not been super severe, as someone else pointed out earlier in the show, but it is spreading a lot. So here's Doug writing. He says, thank you, Sean. You just said it. I want concerts back. I want social, but I want to know what this is about. Hope you talk to the doctor and are going to have on and make this solid. So, okay, thanks, Doug. I will definitely ask the doctor about that. Also, the fast-moving Omicron variant is complicating a key question. How does the COVID-19 pandemic end and the world coexist with the virus? So this is something that I'll definitely ask the doctor about as well. Experts agree that the coronavirus is here to stay. Ending the pandemic won't be like flipping a light switch, nor do scientists expect Omicron to be the last mutation. But at some point, different parts of the world, probably at different times, will tamp down on the virus enough to ease up on the constant state of red alert and consider it another of the health threats we live with. That's how the AP is kind of putting what the end of the pandemic might look like, with end firmly in quotes there. Well, let's hear from the governor. I've been talking a little bit throughout the first half hour of the show about things that the governor has been saying lately. Actually, before I do that, I see that our guest is here. So let me admit our guest right now. And when he joins us, we're going to say hello to Dr. Jason Wilson, Associate Medical Director of the ER at Tampa General Hospital and Associate Professor at USF. So welcome back to WMNF, Dr. Wilson.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me back.
I really appreciate you coming on. We've had some questions already, so I might start with that just before we, you know, get too much further in. Just ask some of the questions that have come in already that people want to know. So Karen wants to know if there's any data on Omicron's effects on an unvaccinated pregnant woman. So that's a question from Karen. What would you say about unvaccinated pregnant women and COVID-19, especially Omicron?
Well, and first of all, Sean, let me just start by saying, too, that the American College of Gynecology is pretty clear that the risk-benefit profile for vaccination in pregnant women is towards vaccination. So please do at least consider vaccine even during pregnancy. There is a benefit there. And now, having said that, we do know that overall, pregnant women often do get sicker when they do get COVID compared to non-pregnant women. Now, with Omicron, I will say one thing that's very promising is that it looks like Omicron affects the lungs much less than Delta. And that's likely why we see less people getting as sick as they were with Delta. So the analogy I always use is if you take 10 particles, for every 10 particles of virus that went to the lungs with Delta, one of those might go to the lungs with Omicron. Problem with pregnant women is that their lung capacity is lower, and so that's why they get sicker. So hopefully, if it's not going to lungs, we don't get quite as sick.
So let's back up a little bit and talk about what we know about Omicron and compare it to what we know about Delta. What obviously the numbers, once we got past the spike here in late summer, in Florida at least, the numbers were very low. The positivity rate was very low. And so we'll call that maybe the Delta spike. And now the numbers during the Omicron spike are very high. So how are Delta and Omicron different when it comes to infectious diseases?
Sure. So just give you some reality around what Omicron looks like right now. We went from about a 3% positivity rate 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, to a 35% test positivity rate here at Tampa General over these last 2.5 weeks, 3% to 35% test positivity. And in that same period of time, Omicron went from representing, you know, one individual case 2.5, 3 weeks ago, to now representing 96% of our positive cases. You know, last week that was over 1,100 people with Omicron, essentially. So what that means is that Omicron, when it shows up somewhere, it takes over the other variants very quickly. And the reason it does that is because it spreads so much easier. It probably spreads 2 to 3 times more than Delta or even the older versions of COVID. And what's a little alarming about that is that we know that COVID in general spreads more than the flu and more than most other viruses. And so that puts us in a position, which is exactly what we're seeing, where the spread of Omicron is really something we haven't seen before. It's very transmissible.
Does that have something to do with where the virus attacks humans or where it is most effective? Because you mentioned earlier that Omicron doesn't get as much into the lungs as other variants have done. Is it the upper respiratory system where the Omicron variant is taking hold?
Yeah, so this is an interesting ongoing scientific discussion that's actually taking place. You know, overall, a virus to be effective has to enter a cell. And the way COVID enters the cell is through the ACE2 receptor. And it has to keep on doing that, no matter how it mutates or no matter what variation it has. It has to do that. Now, what happens also, though, with these mutations is that, yes, it makes therapy challenging, but it also changes the virus itself. What we think has probably happened with Omicron is the virus is likely not as virulent now, meaning it doesn't make you quite as sick, but therefore people with symptoms don't feel as sick, and so they stay around other people. And as they stay around other people, they spread more virus. And that's likely why we see the spread as high as it is.
I want to remind people that our guest is Dr. Jason Wilson, Associate Medical Director of the ER at Tampa General Hospital and Associate Professor at USF Health. So Dr. Wilson, I was asking people for their questions before you came on. So here's one that came in. Doug is asking, is Omicron like the flu plus? And he's saying in a few weeks he'll be able to and we'll get his booster, but with so many people being vaccinated, these waves seem indeterminable. And Doug finishes by saying, they say Omicron is highly transmissible, but the symptoms are slight. So what would you say to his questions?
Yeah, there's a couple things that I unpack, actually. So let's start with, is Omicron more like the flu? And I will say, for the first time this entire pandemic, I am saying a message that is close to what we maybe heard that was inaccurate at the beginning of the pandemic. And that's that if you are vaccinated and boosted, the likelihood, if you get Omicron, is that you likely will not get very, very sick like we saw without vaccines or we saw early in this pandemic. That's assuming you're a person with a normal immune system and fairly healthy. So in that sense, that's a good thing. We might be at a place where a vaccinated, boosted person essentially has a cold. Now, of course, that person still has to be very careful about spreading a virus to other people who might be immunocompromised. There was a little bit more in Doug's question I was going to unpack. Sean, can you remind me the last part of his question? There was something else in there that was interesting.
Yeah, I'm gonna re-find it. It won't take me that long. So he's also asking, at the very end, they say it's highly transmissible, but the symptoms are slight. And he says, with so many people being vaccinated, the waves seem indeterminable, and he might get his booster in a few weeks.
Yeah, got it. So here's the other thing too. People, I think, you know, are having some fatigue and frustration that we just have one wave after another, and it's like this never-ending conversation. that is going to be the conversation until we get these vaccination rates up a little bit higher. Now, here's what's very interesting. This is also something I never would have said at the beginning of the pandemic, but I will say now, is that some of the cases that we're seeing are cases because we have such good surveillance programs built in. And so in other words, if I'm a boosted individual and I'm not worried about people around me because they're all boosted or vaccinated as well, I may not even get tested for COVID because no one's going to get sick around me at some point. Maybe it's Omicron, maybe it's some future variant. But at some point, we probably will see a watered down version after we get back to normal coronavirus. Now, we're still trying to figure out if that's Omicron or not, because we need to see, South Africa is coming down. We would like to see some states, including Florida, come down as well to make sure that is true. But eventually, if we get vaccinated and boosted, we're going to get to a place where, and this is, again, sounds sort of like what we heard in the early part of the pandemic, which was inaccurate, but we would only find cases if we were testing because we have good surveillance. To quickly put that a different way, right now in hospitals, about 30% of our cases, we're only finding because we're seeing the person for something different, admitting them, but have such good surveillance systems, we're picking up those cases. That is different than early, where people we were testing were sick. And so there's been a little shift there, which is a new part of this pandemic.
Our guest is Dr. Jason Wilson, Associate Medical Director of the ER at Tampa General Hospital and Associate Professor of USF Health. You're listening to Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan on 88.5 FM, WMNF.org, and the WMNF app. Dr. Wilson, so if you're vaccinated and boosted, you are more likely to have very less severe symptoms if you get the Omicron variant, but there are a lot of people who aren't vaccinated, and there are a lot of people who haven't gotten the booster, and we don't think that Omicron is going to be the last word on this. It's possible that once, you know, there's the next variant could produce really serious symptoms.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Sean. So a couple of things to say there. First of all, we have to remember that a small percent of a big number is still a big number. So what do I mean by that? Even though most people who get Omicron aren't getting very sick, if everyone has Omicron, if lots of people have Omicron, even that small percentage of people who are sick still has the potential to overwhelm our healthcare system. So we have to be mindful of protecting the healthcare system. The other part of this is not only might there be another variant, there will be another variant. There will be another variant. There will be continuous other variants. And we can't predict. Just like with the flu, some years the flu is not too big of a deal. Go back to 2009, and we had a very bad flu year that killed a lot of people. So we have to be ready for those things as well. Vaccine over and over again has proven to really be the best way to protect ourselves in the long term against those rises, ebbs, and flows of virulence of disease.
So I think everyone can see the advantage of keeping schools open if it's safe for everyone. Do you have any concerns about a blanket rule that schools shouldn't close regardless of the local conditions during a pandemic?
Yeah, and this is, something as a dad, I get, I am, having to make these decisions all the time with other parents. So I understand all of this. And I dropped let people know, I dropped my kid off at school this morning. Now my kid is he's 12 and he's vaccinated, and he will soon be boosted now that boosters are out. We can now get our 12-year-olds boosted as well. That's coming as well. But he's comfortable wearing a mask, and he got his mask out of the car on his own without me telling him, and recognize he's going to need to wear a mask, as a lot of people probably will be positive today, at a public school. There is no mask mandate right now, nor are they allowed to have a mask mandate. The hands of our local public officials have been somewhat tied in the ability to make some of those decisions. So we're seeing some private schools make some decisions, but we're going to have to, as parents, of children, have to make some of these decisions on our own, with our kids, and understand what's going on in our own households in terms of people who may or may not be sick.
From your experience, and this might be too personal a question, but how has has your child getting masked or wearing a mask to school, has that affected him in any way? Is there any kind of bullying that is associated with that?
No, as a matter of fact, we've talked about this quite a bit, and he's very comfortable wearing a mask, and you know, there's a group of other students. A lot of them are healthcare workers, children who also wear a mask, and, you know, some other people who choose to wear a mask as well. And I think at this point, really in society and at most, especially at that age, this is 12-year-old boys who can be sort of tough on each other. Really no big complaints about bullying around that. And I think some choice that's being allowed with masking right now. I mean, you know, to put it this way, that's what people ask for, right? If we're not going to have a mandate, then the ball that was put in the court was we want the choice to do it. So I think we have to respect that choice, you know, if we choose to wear a mask.
Our guest is Tampa General Hospital ER Associate Medical Director, Dr. Jason Wilson, who is also an associate professor at USF Health. Let me read this question that came in from Kelly O. My 15-year-old daughter started feeling sick on Christmas Eve morning, complaining of nausea and headache. As the day progressed, she developed a fever, chills, feeling like she was going to faint. She felt terrible. We used a home kit and she tested positive for COVID Christmas Eve. She's been fully vaccinated since July of 2021. Christmas morning, she was feeling almost normal. She was feeling so much better. We thought maybe it was a false positive test, so we did a second test. It was also positive. Everyone else in the house tested negative and never felt sick. We're all vaccinated. So her question is, should she get a booster, and when should she get a booster if the answer is yes, or is she now boosted from this recent exposure and COVID positive event? And she wraps up her email saying, also, I believe the positivity rate is much higher than reported. My daughter tested positive, but we didn't report it to any agency. I assume we're not the only ones. Should we report to any agency when we test positive using a home kit? So those are some great questions from Kelly O.
Yeah. Those are some great questions. And so let me just talk about home testing kits for a moment. So I have a bunch at the house. I think they're great. That I wish we had 2 years almost into this. They should be just widely available for you just to easily get access to. And we know that's not quite the case yet. We've gone through ebbs and flows where they're, you know, you go into any retail pharmacy store and they're all over the place. For some people, that's a price point that's affordable. Some people, it's not. I recognize that as well. So I think there's still some struggles around that. Now, those tests are called rapid antigen tests, which are different than PCR tests. The PCR tests that go way back in the nares, those are going to be more sensitive for virus. And so they're going to pick up any little bit of viral particle. You know, a person who may not be symptomatic, a person who may be vaccinated, really not even have disease, may test positive on one of the PCR type tests. But the rapid antigen tests at home, they are not going to be nearly as sensitive. It doesn't mean they're not useful, but the reason I mentioned this is because a positive test is going to be a positive test. It would be way more likely that you would have a false negative test that just didn't pick up disease than a false positive. So if you have a positive home test, you are positive, especially if you've got any type of symptoms that fit it, right? Sneeze, sniffles, sore throat, anything like that, which we're seeing with Omicron. So around that, what is a little difficult to interpret right now is when can a person stop isolating? When can your kid, your 15-year-old, come from downstairs or out of the room and be around the rest of the family? And we think probably about 5 days is enough time where you're probably not going to transmit virus to anybody. What's also very interesting is we have so much surveillance testing going on at the pro sports leagues, the NFL, the NHL, et cetera, that we really know when people are spreading disease and when they're not. And it looks like with Omicron, people need to have some symptoms really to spread disease. And that time period probably lasts about a day before virus symptom and about 3 days after. So you call it 5 days to really give yourself a window there. So at day six, she could probably be around family again. Now, the last thing I'll say about this story is that, you know, it really shows how effective vaccines are. I mean, to have a transmissible virus like Omicron in the house and for everybody else to test negative in the house who's vaccinated, that's really a testament to probably some isolation practice you did at home, but also to those vaccines. The last thing I'll actually mention too really quickly is if you're relying on home testing to sort of self-clear a person at your house, you probably want to repeat that test a couple of times. So if it's day three, maybe, and you have a negative, you might want to repeat that one more time, especially if you're going to go see a family member who has a transplant or is on chemotherapy or anything like that.
And one aspect of Kelly's question was, so her 15-year-old was got the vaccine in July,
booster.
And she asked, should she get a booster, or is this positive COVID event now considered kind of a booster?
Sure. So I'm going to answer this in two ways. I'm going to answer it generally first, and I'm going to save a little bit of the pediatric part of the answer for a moment. But the general answer to this question is that for vaccination in general, what we know is that a vaccinated person maintains immunity for a longer period of time than a person who had COVID. So COVID positive patients are going to get a bump in their immunity for a little bit of time through antibody response, but they're not going to get that T cell programming that we're hoping that vaccines, and that we're starting to see now that vaccines really do provide people. So the general advice is that even with the case of COVID, and we know from Omicron that people who had Delta before are being reinfected, but definitively being reinfected. We're seeing plenty of reinfections at this point, but vaccine with booster is decreasing those infections the most. Now, I'm just, the only reason I hesitate a little bit or wanted to put a caveat in there is because the guidance is just now coming out for boostering in the 15-year-old age population. So I would ask that you defer. I would defer part of my answer back to just watching for those guidelines as they become more crystal clear over the next couple of days around 15-year-olds.
Our guest is Dr. Jason Wilson, Associate Medical Director of the ER at Tampa General Hospital and Associate Professor at USF Health. You're listening to Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan on 88.5 FM. It's 10:51 in the morning. We have about 10 minutes left in the show. And if you have a question, go ahead and email us at dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. And there's a question that came in from Stephen. Sorry, Stephen gives a different name. So he says the vaccination is the first line of defense. The government is sometimes helpful, sometimes harmful. Always a political rugby match. And the family is a short circuit to grief when my group was affected, he says. And he's pointing out that the Anthropocene, in the absence of other disasters like wars, he considers it insignificant until more than a billion people die. So I guess it wasn't necessarily a question for the doctor, but I don't know if you have any things you'd like to respond here.
You know, I'll say this. During this entire pandemic, taking care of people and families, the grief around death, you know, whether it's a billion people or one person, is very real for that family. Also, I think at some point we've surpassed number of deaths that we've seen at wars. I think at some point we have to take that as a population pretty seriously. And I will say also during this, the one thing that I have seen definitively change the mathematics of death have been vaccinations. The way I always kind of make the analogy here is that if everybody was vaccinated and boosted, I still don't think it would be a news story. I think that we would have some occasional breakthrough cases, which aren't news, that's just medicine. And we would have some people who had sniffles out there, who probably wouldn't get tested anyway because everybody was vaccinated and boosted. And so I think if you take that away, you only have vaccinated people getting sick, you really don't have much of a news story left at all.
And I just want to follow up with what you're saying there. There are some people who cannot get the vaccine for medical reasons. And I'm going to interpret from what you just said that you're leaving those out. Everyone is boosted, right? All but the small number of people who are medically ineligible or it's unadvisable for them to get the vaccine, that's essentially 100% vaccination.
Yeah, and we might have a couple people who are vaccinated but have some significant immunocompromised or autoimmune disease. It just doesn't make their immune system work quite the same way. They may still get a breakthrough case, and there may just be an outlier, infrequent, sick breakthrough case out there. But again, that's just part of sort of clinical medicine and science, but not really necessarily, news that affects an entire population.
Here's a question that came in about a booster. And this person got the single J&J shot in August, and Colin says he's inclined to get a booster of Pfizer or Moderna. Will I need a second shot of either of those, asks Colin.
Yeah, that's a great question. And just so Colin knows, he may have one other option coming too. J&J just published a nice study showing that with Omicron and a second dose of J&J, they've got really good protection as well. It gets up to that 85 and don't, I can't remember the exact number, but that 80 to 90% range of decreased hospitalizations that we're seeing with booster mRNA vaccines. So if that's an option you want to pursue, that may be coming as well. Now, in terms of your actual question, which is if I get booster with an mRNA on top of my J&J adenovirus vaccine, will I have to get a second mRNA vaccine? I can't definitively answer that question for you. I'll tell you that my reading the tea leaves is the answer is probably yes. I think there's not a clear answer to that right now, but I don't think it would be harmful to have an adenovirus single dose with two mRNAs. But there's going to have to be some personal decision making still as we get more data on that.
And just what we know right now, what's being recommended is if you did get the J&J, there are advantages of getting one dose of one of the mRNA vaccines.
Yeah, and that's what I was alluding to. Up until this recent J&J study, you weren't able to get that 85% to 90% decrease in hospitalizations unless you switched to, you got that mRNA on top of it. But if you do go and get that mRNA, just one mRNA dose, even on top of that J&J, you're likely to get to that place of 85% to 90% decrease in hospitalizations.
And I read earlier in the show an AP story that's coming out today out of Fort Lauderdale, where a South Florida hospital has temporarily closed its maternity ward due to staff shortages related to recent outbreaks of COVID-19. So they're sending maternity patients to other hospitals. They just don't have enough doctors. What's the situation like in Tampa Bay area hospitals, specifically at TGH?
Yeah, staffing challenges are real, and they've been something we've been dealing with in some ways throughout this entire pandemic. I mean, as you, I'm sure, know from other shows you've probably done here around workforce challenges in general right now, the United States and the economy. So we already feel those. Now, on top of that, we've got this highly transmissible variant where even healthcare workers are getting sick and missing work. So we've seen the CDC lower the return to work guidelines based on pretty good science, I think, which we talked about a second ago around the 5 days. And so fortunately, that's allowing us to get some people back to work a little bit quicker. Right now, hospitals are functioning well in the Tampa Bay area because we planned for this. We bought a lot of travel nurses into all the hospitals through Hillsborough County area and Pinellas County area. And so I think things are still in good shape right now, given where we are. We're still off, just to give people an idea. If we call this hopefully around the peak, I hope this is around the peak of Omicron, our hospitalization rates are about half of what we saw during the Delta surge. And so, even if we have some staff out here and there, we're still able to accommodate that patient volume.
Our guest is Dr. Jason Wilson, Associate Medical Director of the ER at Tampa General Hospital and Associate Professor at USF Health. So I just got this this question in about side effects from the vaccine. Michelle in Tampa writes, I was fully vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine and got COVID and had the monoclonal antibody treatments. And then when I got my booster shot, which was also Pfizer, I got ill for 4 days. Why do people get sick when they have had their booster? Asks Michelle in Tampa.
So if I understand the question correctly, I think it's why do people sometimes have sort of an immune response to the vaccine? And some of us have had it. Some people don't have one at all. Some of us have the second dose, the first dose, the third dose. And it may matter whether you've had COVID before because you may be primed to have a response. And essentially what it is your immune system is working, right? You're being exposed to an antigen and you're responding by making antibodies. You're responding by ramping up your immune system. Now the immune system is going to quickly realize, hey, there's no real threat here. This thing doesn't seem to be reproducing or replicating. And it's going to all kind of just die down. Hopefully that dies down in a couple of hours. I think for most people, for example, when I got the booster, I was sore for a couple of hours. When I got my second shot, I was sore with some chills for about 3 or 4 hours. So it's going to vary for people. And it may matter whether you've had COVID or not, when you have that reaction.
There have been long lines at some of the county-operated and city-operated testing facilities lately. What do you think will reduce those lines? Do we need to open federal or state testing facilities, or do people need to go to the private route, or should people just not get tested? What would you recommend?
Sure, it's a great question. I'll echo Cheap Trip's comments, I think, from this morning as well, that, if you're going to go get tested at a site, we just go into a line, try to reserve that testing for people who really need to be tested. Either people who are going to be around immunocompromised people or people who are symptomatic. Now, having said that, there was another site I believe opened up today as well. It's a drive-through site. So if you're having trouble, standing in lines or those kind of things, that might be a good alternative site. Ideally, I would tell you that there is a great place to get free home testing, and I don't think we're quite there yet. What I would ask people to do is if you're not sick and not experiencing significant COVID symptoms, to try to avoid coming to your local hospitals, because your local hospitals really do need to save room and space and resources to take care of the sickest COVID patients and other patients too in this area.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on WMNF's Tuesday Cafe today, Dr. Wilson.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, Sean, and thanks for getting this information out.
Thanks so much. Dr. Jason Wilson is Associate Medical Director of the ER at Tampa General Hospital and Associate Professor at USF Health. I want to thank Lamar Robinson for answering phones today. You've been listening to Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan. The show is every Tuesday morning at 10. In this time slot tomorrow, Janet and Shelley host Midpoint. Next up, we have guest hosts filling in, Mary and Arlene. They will interview Spotted Horse from the Lakota Sioux Tribe of the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. She's a singer-songwriter, artist, and is well known as a fighter for social justice. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks so much for listening.